This episode is sponsored by Kiprun and their brand new super shoe, the KD900X LD, which Shoe Geek Me got to go out to their campus in Lille to test.
Yeah, so explain what you did over in Lille and how much faster were you in the shoes?
So I tested it against a regular shoe, non-carbon plated, and their previous version of the super shoe, the KD900X. This one's 10% lighter, has a brand new foam and feels much more responsive. And I was over 8% more economical compared to a non-plated shoe, which is mind-blowing.
Absolutely phenomenal, because every little helps in a marathon, but it's not just little old you that's tested the shoe, is it?
No, thankfully it's not just me. They've been tested by some of the best athletes in the world. So Maline Roland, the French record holder in the women's marathon, set her record in these shoes earlier in 2024, running 2:24, which is pretty fast.
Incredible. And they are available now. So if you want to go check them out, head to decathlon.com. They're also available in Decathlon stores worldwide. This episode is sponsored by us. We've hijacked it again.
Yes, we love doing this. We've teased this for a couple of months. Unbearably, we've had a few emails about it, but we can now tell you all about it. We've teamed up with Sports Tours International to give you the chance to come and run with us at the Malaga Marathon and Half Marathon on the 15th of December this
year. Yes, last year you ran your first ever marathon, and only a few of us got to witness the pain of that in real life. But this year, you can come and run the marathon, the half, and we're going to try and get Rick signed up to the half marathon too.
That's going to be the hardest job here. There are limited spots, but we have sorted it out with Sports Tours International. So they'll handle all of the tricky bits, the logistics and the bookings and so on. And you get 3 nights in a 4-star hotel, which is really exciting. But they'll look after you. They're the experts at doing this, which is why we've teamed up with them. So basically, if you'd like to come and get a little bit of winter sun, training for a marathon that time of year, I really liked. And this is very close to Valencia, so I'm essentially guaranteeing the weather.
Yeah, I'm not sure we can quite do that. But if you want a shakeout run, an excellent race, an after party and a live podcast recording, then grab your spot now. Head to the link in the show notes to find out more. Or go to trc.social/Malaga.
This is the Running Channel podcast with me, Andy Badley, Sarah Hartley just over here, and then over there with way too many notes. So many, in fact, that I want to confiscate from them because they make me really nervous. It's Rick Kelsey.
You did 71 episodes with me and then one without me.
And we're free. We got one without you.
It must have been hard.
It was really easy, actually.
For you.
It wasn't. Well, today we're going to be talking about dealing with pressure. And I actually think that the pressure of not having you there, actually, maybe that was the opposite. It lifted a weight from us. We didn't have the pressure of you being a liability on the show.
It was just a lovely day.
Okay, are we going to get straight into it really quickly?
Yes, because we do need to address that very quickly.
Yeah, straight into it.
Let's get into it.
On topic. Bang. Okay.
So, I made the mistake this week of telling Andy mine and Rick's favourite hobby, which is having a look on a website called Chartable and seeing how our podcast is doing. Now, also on there, we can read your lovely feedback. So, yes. If you do ever want to leave a review, we do read them. And we get so many lovely, lovely reviews. But obviously, as you're scrolling through, you take a look at the ones that maybe aren't so good.
Yeah, and you only fixate on this, on the ones that are bad. And we talk about this on YouTube, like the idea of, broadly speaking, proportionally, it's a Wembley Stadium full of people being really excited about stuff, and then a small handful of people in the front row that are saying, "We don't like you. You're not very nice."
So we're going to talk about our 1-star review.
Yeah. Oh god.
Yeah, you told me about this, and this has been living in my head since you told me about it. And I think it was, I came here for the science,
yes,
and all I got was this useless banter. Which,
well, I mean, I don't know what they're talking about.
This is incredibly useful banter.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Very useful.
I think so. And today we're going to talk about some pretty in-depth stuff of dealing with pressure in running.
You're trying to just own it.
Okay.
Take on that one star.
If you want science, go elsewhere. Well, if you want useless banter, stick around.
Great place for it. You're in the right spot.
You two have brought
me down. Stand by caller.
You've brought me down to your level.
Yeah, I think if Andy had done a podcast by himself, it would be like the Science. Shipping forecast. Welcome back. Today in running, we're discussing...
Shipping forecast. Okay.
Well, we're talking about VO2 max and anaerobic exercises.
But we don't use acronyms, so that's volume of oxygen.
And TCO, PCPs, lower tube. And
LBTs. I hate you both so much. I was going to say something nice now.
Oh, go on.
Because... also, we get lovely comments on YouTube as well. So on one of our recent Running Channel Meets podcasts, we had this comment, which is a lovely contrast. So it was, actually, I love the contrast in the 3 Running Channel Meets episodes so far. Colin Jackson runs for 14 seconds, Adele for 3.5 hours, and Jasmine for 60 hours. But all of them are runners. It really sums up the ethos of the Running Channel. If you run, You're a runner.
Oh, that's nice.
They
have been different.
I'm back in the game after that.
Yeah.
No, that was the pick-me-up that I needed.
All three TLC meets were we meet incredible runners with amazing stories have been so different so far. And we've got some absolute treats coming up, including one that we've recorded this week with a guy who's doing something amazing for a neonatal movement, which will bring you to tears.
Oh, yeah. We've had to kind of gather ourselves to do this podcast after that one. And so actually the useless banter that you guys provide, bringing me down to your level, is exactly what I need to kind of get out of that.
Do we bring you down to our level?
Or do you bring me you up to your level?
We bring you up.
Okay.
Anyway, listen, I just want to say that I missed you both.
Back to you.
There was a reason why I was away. I was hosting an award ceremony, as I do, you know, like in my award ceremonies.
Yeah. Was it the Botox award ceremony?
Oh my God, he's gone deep. He's gone deep into my skin.
Like the plastic surgeon.
I think Rick was laughing at that joke, but I wasn't sure.
I wasn't sure. Anyway, you do laugh, but it was one of those award ceremonies where I wasn't quite sure what I was hosting until about halfway through. And then it was the Pavement Awards, essentially, I was hosting.
So,
well, it was the Asphalt, Pavement Awards. Yeah. But I had some good gags. So, they did all right.
Hit me with a good gag.
So I said, I welcomed everyone to the event. And I said, well, my friend told me once that he ate a pavement. I asked him if he had any concrete proof of this. I fluffed it.
You can't edit that.
Don't you dare say edit.
Oh, God, no. All right.
Did it go better on the night?
All right, it did. It did go better. Right, I've got another one. All right. I was taking a walk this afternoon when out of nowhere, the pavement started viciously attacking me. Psychopath.
God, I shouldn't laugh.
Sarah.
Anyway, it was good fun. No, but
if anyone wants to have someone who's as professional at delivering lines as that to book for your awards, then
contact.
Rick Cassidy's available.
Yeah, no.
Very available.
I do run my gags past my brother before I do these awards because he's the person in the world who probably finds me the least funny. In fact, I've never seen him laugh at anything I've ever done. Apart from when I fell out of a tree on my stag do. That's the only time I've ever seen him laugh at me.
That's fair.
The world's tamest stag do because you're in charge of it.
Speaking of pavements,
it was just a spa day of skin treatments.
What's your favourite pavement to run on?
Ooh.
Not like block paving because you trip over them.
Yeah. That's what I was going to say.
Yeah, like one of the new asphalt kind of pavements.
I mean, you really did no research for this, did you?
Well, for what?
For your awards.
For my awards. Oh my gosh, I was so on top of it. By the end of the night, I was all
Rick's
over
that
it.
Person, though, where like, I'm sure on the day, very professional, knew all the information, could chat about pavements
but
for hours.
But with you two.
One night sleep, gone.
It's gone. Yeah.
You're a one-day wonder of absorbing information.
Before we get into this, actually, I've got a genuine question, though, for you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Why do people say that? They've got a genuine question. I mean,
what's an ungenuine question?
People do that online all the time. So annoying. Anyway, right. Yeah. Ran 10K, and it said that I did 5 aerobic and 0.4 anaerobic. Like, what? 5 of what? 5 of what aerobic and 0.4 of what anaerobic? What have I done?
Well, you're right, you've done 5 aerobics and 0.4 anaerobics. What more needs explaining?
Andy?
It just doesn't give you any more information.
It gives you a rate. It's a rating of what energy zones you're operating in your workout, in your run. So if you were doing a 10K race, then probably that sounds about right because you have dipped into kind of anaerobic a little bit, but it's majority aerobic. If you're just doing an easy conversational run, then the anaerobic score should be 0.0 because you should never get near your kind of zone 4, zone 5.
Okay,
what's interesting about, when we talk about 80-20 running, and you need 80% easy running within your training week, 20% faster running, that's when it's interesting. Like if you look at an interval session that you might do on your watch, it's not going to say all anaerobic.
Because you've got the recoveries in there.
Yeah, because you've got the recovery. So you will have a split. But then if it's an easy run, you're looking for that to all be aerobic. If you were just recording one flat out sprint, you're probably going to be anaerobic.
Yeah, and your watch will base the status it gives you for your training, whether it's improving your training or whether you've got a good balance. It'll base that on the proportion of time you spend in each zone. So you want
heart rate zone.
Kind of heart rate zone, but then it interprets that into aerobic, anaerobic, and usually it splits aerobic into kind of high aerobic and low aerobic.
Okay.
And then you have anaerobic, and you want to have, you only need to spend a small amount of time in the anaerobic zone. So it's
does
not,
that
it's
sound
not
about like, right?
I think that does. If it was a 10K, if you're going pretty hard. I think 0.4 anaerobics is good.
It's good. Well, I'm glad we've cleared that up.
See, that was, I mean, we're...
That's science.
9 minutes in and we've got a bit of science.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, I was under pressure to get that done.
Oh,
hello. We haven't even talked
pressure.
About our running though.
No time.
Okay, we're going straight.
Have you heard about the feedback?
No. Hey, look, if you don't care about us.
No, we do.
You should leave.
We can give a quick training update.
No, please tell me about your 2 running weeks, because I realised this morning that I don't follow Sarah on Strava. I only started following her this morning. I'm so sorry. And at least I've admitted it. So I apologise.
Do you want to know?
I now follow you.
Do you want to know what's quite funny?
Now, go on.
I don't follow you. You just realised.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I'm in a bit of a weird one at the moment where I would say out of all of the people in the Running Channel office, half of them I follow on Strava and half of them I don't. And every time I like stumble across, like for example, one of our videographers, Tito, went out for a run with someone else called Elliot. I don't follow Elliot on Strava. But when I realise that I'm not following these people on Strava, it's like 9 p.m. having a wee scrolling on Strava. And I'm like, is that an awkward time to follow someone?
I see.
I don't think I ever look at the time at which people follow me. So I follow you
fine.
Both.
Yeah, I follow you.
Do you follow me?
I don't really do Strava, but I follow you.
Well, mainly to see how people rip into you in your Strava comments, because that is a great place to be.
Some lovely inadverted comment.
Inadverted commas.
I do get some lovely inadverted commas comments from people. But speaking of like following my Strava, I guess that's the thing that we're following on the Running Channel at the moment, is my journey to this 5K.
Yeah.
So there's a reason to come
not
back to
long,
the podcast
not
to
long
see
to
how
go.
That gets on. And then we'll move on to Rick's challenges and Sarah's challenges. But we're banging on about this for now. So yeah, I got a 5K to do.
How's the training going?
It's good. I love this stuff. I think it's not as bad as sock shoe psychopath. But I think I'm a psychopath for kind of loving the fast stuff. I was talking to someone about this who loves marathons and ultras and stuff, and they just couldn't get their heads around anyone liking 5K. I love the training. I love hurting myself for a short period of time where I'm like very, very close to my max.
Yeah, you
and then
did
having recovery.
A reducing intervals workout.
I did, yeah.
Yeah. What on earth is that?
So I started with 2K and then every interval gets shorter and should get faster.
You clever
boy. I saw someone in your Strava comments being like, the struggle with this workout is remembering all the steps.
Yes, 100%. I had to program into my watch.
I feel like, I feel like you're the person where you'd be like, no, I can remember that fine. Because it is like quite a nice step down.
Yeah, I definitely could remember it. I knew exactly what was coming. So I wasn't really looking at my watch, but my watch kept me honest. So I didn't have to kind of lap it manually.
Yeah.
I like that. Your watch kept you honest.
So yeah, I did 2K. Yeah. Mile, 1600, 1200, 1K, 800, 400. So
speaking of lapping, actually, this is a nice little podcast perk. I'm currently writing a script about a load of watch hacks. And one of them that has literally blown my mind that I showed Rick earlier is that on a Garmin, you can undo a lap press, which I didn't realise was a thing. Yeah, it's got an undo button. Yeah. But I spoke to other people in the office and I was like, did you know this was a thing? And someone else was like, oh, I've always wondered what that button did.
Oh, I see.
Because it literally comes up with like a reverse arrow.
So it's the same button again, isn't it? Or is it?
No, so like lap is bottom right, unlap is bottom left.
So I've got one. So I was having some bubbles last night. And
does that mean you're drinking champagne or you're in the hot tub?
In the hot tub. And
could have been both, actually.
It could have been. No glasses in there, though. plastic glasses are fine. off subject. My watch froze. My watch froze. And I wasn't familiar with that. However, I discovered that if you hold the light button, so the top left button as you're looking at the face for 15 seconds, it resets your watch.
Yeah.
So if it freezes, there you go. Because it has done that once before, and I basically waited overnight, plugged it in for it to do something overnight. But
that's like 15 seconds. With my phone, no idea how to turn it off.
But is it one of the new iPhones?
Yeah, you have to hold both buttons. But the other day I was like, oh, I'm going to have to turn it off because it got stuck on a timer. Yeah. And I was like, genuinely had to Google, how do I turn off my phone?
Good. Sarah, do we need to know anything about your running in the last 7 days?
Quick top line.
Yeah.
Still injured my Achilles.
Oh, yeah?
Was brave enough to go to the physio. And actually, it wasn't as bad as I thought. Someone else I know has injured their Achilles. And
which physio did you go to?
Just a local one in London. Yeah. And he was great. He went through, he like felt my Achilles versus on my other foot, was like, what are you doing currently? And I was like, well, self-medicated. I've dropped down to 2 runs a week and then I'm just leaving big gaps. And he was like, no, that's wrong. And I was like, cool, that's why I'm not a physio. So basically I'm reducing my overall distance when I'm running, but I'm now switching to running basically up to 5K, less if it doesn't feel good, every other day. And then I've got like specific exercises to do in the gym every other day with the aim of, rather than it being like big spikes in load and then big gaps, it'll be like lower continuous load and then we'll just build it up and then I'll be ready for my half marathon
in
September.
Be ready, and
I'll be running that PB. I've got so much motivation, which always happens when you're injured because you can't go out and do it. And then as soon as I can run again, I'll be like, nope, don't want to go to the track.
And if you do have Achilles pain like Sarah has, then it'll be quite individual. So you've been to see a physio, you've got that specific advice. So
And it's really interesting because there is like, there's so much. I am terrible. I did Google it and there's so much conflicting advice online. So like, do definitely for pain like that, go and see, because he drew me an Achilles. Want to say muscle.
And the reason for the
pain. The muscle.
Yeah, I mean,
it's not a muscle.
Wow. Sorry, not a muscle. He drew it.
Tendon?
He drew out. Yeah, sorry, tendon, because I've got tendinopathy. I drew it out, and no, he drew it out, and then like described what it was, and I was like, oh, I've come away and I've learned something.
Sarah, your Achilles has been under a lot of pressure, but runners in general are under pressure to achieve and push themselves to new levels.
I think this is an interesting topic to talk about, because for a lot of people listening to this, you might be like, oh, I don't have any pressure. But actually, even as an average runner, I feel like you are, or you can put quite a lot of pressure on yourself. If you're going to a race, regardless of whether you're trying to run a PB, or if you're just turning up and trying to do something for the first time, or even if you're going to park run, there is that kind of element of,
oh gosh,
okay, it's slightly elevated. It's that slightly pressured situation. Mm. And then that might be, you might feel the same amount of pressure as Andy when he was competing in the Olympics, or like for any of us when we go and take on a challenge, we've got the lovely Running Channel community who are invested in it, they're following along, that's added pressure as well. So I feel like all of us are relatively good at dealing with pressure, but I guess we should share some tips and for anyone else who is struggling with pressure whilst running.
Yeah, and I think the first thing is to acknowledge that you might oscillate back and forth from one extreme where you're like, I'm so worried about this, because you've been building up to something over the course of months as you train for it, and then it becomes this be all and end all, and you're kind of organizing your life around it, and then thinking, it's not that important, no one else cares, like why am I so worried about this thing?
Yeah,
and just kind of acknowledging that swings in your emotions about it is totally normal.
And that's hard as well, because that is quite often the, like for London Marathon, I was like, oh, I'm scared, like I'm worried about this, there's so much pressure. And then I remember like some of the things that you and other people were telling me. I think someone had told you in your career, like, don't worry, everyone's going to go back to watching EastEnders the week after.
Yeah,
which is like, it's really good advice for taking that pressure off, but you need to not remove the element of like, it's okay to care about it as well.
Yes.
It's not that like no one cares and you shouldn't care, it's not important. It's just don't let that external pressure affect how you're feeling.
Yeah, and I think look back to a previous time in your life where what you would have thought about the opportunity that you now have. So for me at the Olympics, I was like, I've worked really hard for 10 years from being like a teenager thinking, idolizing people on the TV in the Olympics and just thinking this is the pinnacle of it. I would give anything to be there. How do you get there? What do I need to do? How much better do I need to get? And getting a little bit better every year, finding a coach, all of that stuff. So then being in that position where I wasn't just going to the Olympics, I was going to the Olympics to try and win a medal. And then you sort of feel the pressure in a different way. But then psychology wise, and I did get the luxury of working with a sports psychologist, you're then like, I would be like, I've worked really hard to have the opportunity to have that pressure. So almost like this pressure is my reward for all of the hard work. And that's the same for a 16-week marathon plan, regardless of who you are, how fast you're trying to run. Like, you've worked really hard to put yourself in a position where you can kind of embrace the pressure.
It's hard with running as well, because you can't cheat it. You have to like put in the work in order to run a marathon or a 5K or a 1K, whatever that is. And I think that adds to the pressure as well, because it's like, oh, all of this time, I want this outcome.
Yeah.
And that outcome is 100% not guaranteed, whether that's a medal at the Olympics or a faster time at parkrun or a marathon PB.
Yeah.
It's or like completing a distance for the first time. It's running is so unfair, but that's kind of why I like it, because it is that like hard work sometimes lead to reward, sometimes doesn't. And for me personally, quite often it is pressure which is the the like tipping point.
Yeah, and you've got to handle pressure in a way so that you don't end up talking yourself out of it. Like pressure can build, and so a release for that pressure. So talking to someone, having a distraction, mm-hmm. having your family or friends or going for a run, listening to a podcast like the Running Channel podcast, just something to take your mind off it, or coping strategies to deal with it at key moments. Like I think that the hardest point for me I found to deal with pressure is the night before the race, whatever that race is or
not event. On the start line.
No, I was always, once I'm, if I could just snap my fingers from, you know, a few days before the race to then be on the start line, that's what I'm absolutely in the game, ready to
that's
go.
That's interesting.
Trust myself then, because you can't do anything
about it.
I spend so much time worrying about, am I eating the right thing? Do I need to go to the toilet? Should I do a little stretch? Do I need to do a foam roller? Mm. Oh, does that niggle hurt there? Have I had enough sleep? Have I had enough to drink? I'm in my own head. And so it's really important not to let that get on top of you. And so I would find that the moment that I feel in a pretty good place, and if I hadn't done what I'm about to describe, I guess I would turn the light off the night before, 10 o'clock or whatever, to go to bed. And feeling pretty good. The moment the light's off and I'm lying there, feeling pretty sleepy, ready to go to sleep, bang, I'm wide awake.
Wide awake.
All of the thoughts are coming through my head and I'm like, what if this happens? What if that happens? What if, like...
Can't tune out.
No.
Can't tune out. But can your Olympic experience be... Can someone resonate with that for the night before a marathon? So you're on the start line on marathon day. You've got loads of people. All your senses are zinging off.
Yeah.
Because you just got so much sensory impulses going on, so many. But then the night before, you're on your own, you know, room, quiet, and you can't zone out, you can't get to sleep.
Yeah, so to address that one, the night before, what I would do is before turning the light off and actually before getting into bed, I would sit at like the desk in the hotel I was staying in or whatever, and there's usually some hotel stationery. And I remember it vividly over the course of 10 years doing this. And I would write down all of the things that were... Like I would try really hard to consciously think about the things that are worrying me. So, and then I would write each point down. So I'd write down that I was worried about a particular person that was going to be in the race the next day because they were a rival. And then I'd worry about, what if the pace is too fast and I can't keep up? And then I'd write down. So I'd write down all of these things that I was, so that for, if anyone, that could be, I'm worried about I haven't done the right training, or what if I just can't complete the distance, or what if I get cramp, or what if, like all of the things that you think you're about to think about when you fall asleep. Mm. And then I'd write down next to each one a rational, because they're quite emotional, those responses. I'd write down a rational reason why that thing wasn't something to worry about. So if it was about a rival, I'd write down, I can't control what they do. I can only control what I'm doing, and I've done some amazing training.
This is so good, isn't
and then I'd cross.
Anyone can use this.
Yeah, and I think
and
as
I'd
well.
I'd cross out each point as I go through it. Because then you'd like, that's quite important. It sounds really small, but physically crossing out the doubt that you've dealt with is a powerful association that you
make.
So
powerful.
And then I would finish by writing a list of maybe 5 or 10 bullet points that were the opposite. They were all of the reasons that I would run well. So I've done the best training of my life, a very specific training session that I did 10 days ago. The fact that I really trust my coach. The fact that when it comes down to it, when I get on the start line previously in the last however many years, I've always done okay. Like I would back myself to make the right choices. Mm. And then I would fold that piece of paper up, put it into my race bag for the next day. So I could refer back to it if I wanted to, if I was having a moment of doubt the next day.
Your notes before you go to bed are so good. Mine are just what I've got to get from Morrison's.
And it's all just Gavi, just... Gavi, 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 champagne.
Plastic glasses so I can take it in the hot tub. I do think with that though, it's so important to sit with it. Because I think for a lot of people, like I definitely, for London Marathon, I wish I'd done something like that. Because for in the taper weeks, the week before, you're going like, a worry can enter your brain and then you go like, oh, it'll be fine.
Yeah.
It'll be fine. And you'll just brush it aside. But then when you're actually in something, whether that is a 5K, whether it's a marathon, whether it's longer, there's going to be a point where it's not as easy to just brush it away. And that's when you need those tools of like, no, I've already addressed this point. Or like, okay, no, let's think about those list of 5 things why I should do well. And that's the psychology of what helps you in the moment. Because it's easy if you're just in the shops doing your weekly food shop and you've got a marathon a week later and a thought enters your brain of, oh, what if I can't do it? Of course, you can probably think yourself out of that. But it's when you're at mile 20 and you need to focus on that and it's getting quite hard. That's when it's good to have those tools.
It's like having, like drills are your way of there's an analogy here. Drills are your way of
is that a little analogy
it's
warning? It's
coming. Well, I was thinking I might take
Stand
my time
by.
To get. I
might take about 2 minutes, but settle in. There's going to be something useful at the end of this.
Yeah. Should we have a break?
Brace yourselves. My God, I hate this. If you do drills, it's your way of conditioning your body, the muscle memory, so that when you get tired, you don't think about the fact you need good posture and you need good running form and you need to make the right foot contacts. It just happens. And so doing these kind of exercises where you take an emotional response to something, because that's ultimately what that is that goes through your mind, like right before a race or when you might be talking yourself out of it, it's like, it's irrational. Mm. You're worried about something you can't control usually.
Yeah.
If you've already added a rational thought to it, and you've kind of already addressed it in terms of your memory, then you do remember it. So the next day, when the same doubts creep back, you can immediately, either if you pull a piece of paper out and remind yourself, but hopefully actually it's sunk in. So
that's really good.
You can just go, this was the thought. Mm-hmm. And actually, this is classic, like mindfulness meditation is like, you don't judge the thought or like don't feel the emotion, just to kind of acknowledge, I felt like that. All right, well, this was my answer. And then you've kind of, you should have dealt with it. And people use, I know lots of sports people use things like elastic bands on their wrist, where they'll snap them just to
bring their brain back into focus.
Exactly, to bring it into the present rather than wandering off into kind of.
Sarah, what you got on pressure?
Well, I was just going to say, so I think we've dealt with like pre-pressure and like pre-nerves. I wanted to ask Andy, how much, when you think of like Olympics, when you think of winning the dream mile, how much would you say in a kind of racing situation or a high pressure situation, what's the split physical to mental preparation or like physical versus mental challenge?
It's 90 something percent mental because if I'm
really?
In that context, yes. So like if you're in the Olympic final or in the dream mile, then I'm looking on that start line thinking, is there a massive percentage disparity in how fit these guys are versus me? Probably not. I'm backing myself that
I should have been a pro runner. I would have had the mental side. physical bit.
There was quite a big caveat there that I was thinking they were all pretty well trained.
I think cool to finish the section on though is there's an incredible story of you and your coach because like you were pretty much a model student of like go in, compete.
But yeah, Andy Hopdell.
Instance where Andy Hopdell had to come to your rescue.
He did. So the Dream Mile, which is arguably one of the biggest moments of my career, it's the race that I grew up watching. Ovette, Cram, Co. set world records there and the news would be interrupted.
Where is it?
On the BBC.
Norway? Is it Norway?
Yeah, it's in Oslo, yeah. Yes, Rick. and the race would be at 10 o'clock at night. So that was even because it was still broad daylight in Norwegian summer. Yeah. And so you're in the hotel for so long during the day and that's more time for me to get in my head. Mm-hmm. I rocked up at the track. I didn't get to the track till about 8 o'clock and there'd been races going on already. And the mile was the very last race of the meet and there'd already been a 1500 meters. They're basically a very similar distance, but that was effectively the B race. And Tom Lancashire, good friend of mine, but also at that point, one of my biggest rivals, had won the 1500 meters in a time that qualified him for the Olympics. And I rocked up at the track and one of the statisticians for the BBC just came running up to me. Did you see Tom's run? Da, da, da. And I was like, no. And it just absolutely threw me completely out of this calm. I'd done all the rationalization of all of the other things I thought I was worried about.
Yeah,
I didn't realize I was worried about this.
Just a wild card. Yeah. So then what happened?
So then this is one of the very few races that Andy ever traveled with me to abroad. And I called him and he's like, what's Andy doing calling me?
Because he was just sat in the stands.
Yeah,
wasn't
he? And he was like, what? What do you want?
Love
and
it.
Then he came down underneath the track, which is where the warm-up track was. That's really cool. And he's like, what's the matter? And I told him this. And he just looked at me almost in disgust, but obviously like he was understanding as well.
Yeah, yeah.
He's like, what are you talking about? And then he just goes, what session did you do last Tuesday? I was like, and I told him. And he goes, is that the fastest you've ever done that? I was like, yeah. And he goes, do you think anyone else in the world could have done that session right now? No. And then he goes, okay. And then he just literally just walked off.
So good.
He's like, you're ready to go. Off you go.
And then what happened?
And then I won.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, the power of like harnessing that pressure, but then also amazing. I guess the power of other people to bring it out of you as well. Yeah. So not only like having your own methods, but also like having that person, whether it's a coach, a friend, a partner, to just like...
Someone who understands you and knows
tell
which,
you you're
which
being
buttons
silly.
They can push at the right time
yeah.
to really help you do your best.
Speaking
and
of
Rick
buttons.
Can't push buttons, but he can wave his arms about. So you're listening to the Running Channel podcast. Up next, we've got news followed by our favourite bit, your questions. Don't forget, this episode is sponsored by Kiprun and their brand new KD900X LD shoes. Now, fun fact, Andy, do you know what Kiprun stands for?
Is this a fun fact?
It is a fun fact. Kip run is a contraction of keep on running.
Oh, I did know that. Mainly because you told me just before we started recording this and you're very, very excited
hey,
about
I love
it.
A fun fact, but what are you excited about?
I'm excited about the fact that Kip run have this incredible research and development facility in Lille, which I got to go to. I was in shoe geek heaven. I tested the shoes. They genuinely did feel faster. And then the data did bear that out. I was 8% more economical. So I used 8% less energy to run at a set marathon pace in these shoes compared to regular running shoes.
Yeah, you really do forget how much work goes into getting a shoe from the design process to being available to buy. And if you want to buy these, head to decathlon.com, or they're also available in Decathlon stores worldwide.
Don't forget, you can come and run with us at the Malaga Half Marathon and Marathon in December this year. We'd love to have you come and join us.
Oh, it's going to be so good. And there are so many of us coming out there. So you might be able to run alongside us as well. I don't know what I'm doing there yet. Do you want a pacing? Let me know.
Yeah, if you want Sarah to pace you to a half or a full marathon, or if you want Rick to get involved.
No. Sarah will not be pacing you to a full marathon. Sarah will be pacing you to a half marathon.
Sign up now and we can make this happen. This is what we need. But you get to have lots of fun with us. 3 nights in Malaga, all sorted out by Sports Tours International. If you want to join us, places are limited. So as quick as you can, head to the link in the show notes or to trc.social/Malaga. The website has all of the details of the costs involved, so you can take a look at the different options. Flights aren't included, but this isn't a money-making exercise for the Running Channel. It's a chance to take everyone out to Spain for an amazing experience. And the cost is what it costs for the hotel and for Sports Tours to organise it all.
News time. Edinburgh. Lots of people have been contacting me about Edinburgh and A, how much fun it was, but B, some of them missed out on a medal.
Yeah, it was a wet course and loads of people said that they had an amazing time out on the course. Crowds were amazing, but unfortunately a lot of people were left without medals, which is such a shame. And I understand it from, you know, events companies are struggling post-COVID. It's a hard place, but... By the amount of medals for the people that signed up, because the people who have been out on the course for the longest amount of time
probably deserve it the most.
I'm sure we'll get some messages in from race organisers because it's really hard. They have to predict dropout because it is quite a big outlay. And there's an environmental impact as well of buying stuff that never gets used.
So. Personally, I would be in favour of the same medal for a race forever. Helps the events companies. Everyone's guaranteed a medal. Buy in bulk, use for the next 50 years.
But then if you did the same event every year...
You get the same medal lots of time.
Would you still like keep hold of those and just have like 10 of the same medal?
I think a lot of people would disagree with you.
Well, just add little things onto the...
Medals are
on the lanyard.
On the lanyard.
But running's like, unique, isn't it, with medals? Runners get medals quite often. If you play in a rugby team or a cricket team, then you don't get medals all the time.
Yeah, true.
No idea of the relevance of that.
So I did a Tough Mudder recently, and you get ahead.
There's so many medals.
Oh, okay.
So the event organisers are constantly having to produce more and more medals.
It does also mean that different people get to design them, so it's hard. But I did a Tough Mudder recently, and the more times you do it, you get a different colour headband.
So maybe
they do that. Run Edinburgh Marathon 10 times.
Okay.
Get a headband.
Yeah, Sarah Hartley has...
Don't employ me.
It's full of ideas.
Race organiser. Anyway, other news, Andy.
Really quick one from me. Olympic year, so I'm going to keep bringing us back to some Olympic performances on the track.
Mm.
And I'm always biased towards the mile and the 1500. So there's a famous mile out at the Prefontaine Classic, which is the big meeting in the US, in Oregon. And the British record for the mile, which was held by Steve Cramahan, has stood for 39 years. And I would have loved to get close to this. I ran 3:49, Steve Cramahan ran 3:46. And during his period of competing, actually, that was in the 80s, that was the first time that it went under 3:50.
Oh, wow.
And now Josh Kerr, who's the world champion from 2023,
mm-hmm.
went out, won that race, beat Jakob Ingebrigtsen's, their big rivals. And that rivalry is really building ahead of the Olympics. And I think that's
really cool.
What's been missing in athletics for like the last few years.
Decent rivalry.
Yeah, where people can actually like pick a side and get excited. I'm biased, obviously, because Josh is British. And he ran 3:45.34 and used different tactics. He took Ingebrigtsen on early. Usually it's someone passes Ingebrigtsen in the last 100 metres.
Yeah.
Whereas this time Josh made all the running, which is amazing.
You know, Cram's record though, you know, we talk so much on this podcast about how modern medicine and modern shoes have propelled younger athletes to amazing times and amazing performances. Cram's record's 39 years old or something. Is that what you said? 39 years old?
Yeah, it's a phenomenal time. 3:46 in that era. So they had the same track surfaces broadly. They have improved a bit.
Right.
But yeah, they'd have been running, the spikes that me and Steve Cram ran in wouldn't Same have been thing. Wildly
I
different.
Would
but now they are different.
To be a record holder from 40 years ago.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
surely like you're just strolling around going like, didn't wear super shoes then.
Still got
yeah.
it.
Yeah. 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 He'd definitely yeah. be smug. And if anyone wants to, they should dig out some old footage of Steve Cram running back in the 80s because
oh, I'd love to see that.
Very few people that look as natural and flowing as him. Like it's unbelievable to watch him, particularly in 800 meters at the Commonwealth Games. Go and seek that out.
Woo! Rick, right. Questions.
Nicholas from Germany. He's 24 years old and he's got a question regarding easy running. For context, he says, I've been roughly following the 80-20 rule for about 7 to 8 months. Haven't been doing it religiously, but just been following it as a guide. The thing is, during this time, three of my fastest easy runs have been on days when I've spent the night before clubbing and drinking. The first two times, I took it as a coincidence. But this weekend, I'm starting to see a pattern, he says. Is there any science behind this? Or is it just an oddity? Obviously not recommending it. Well, Nicklas, well. What do I say? Sometimes I get out there on a Saturday morning and woof, my times. One bottle or two. Shared, obviously, shared. With
of
yourself.
Of the G-Dog. One glass for Rick, second glass for Rick.
Yeah, exactly.
I will say, we went to a few run clubs earlier this year and there was one in Dublin that was amazing and they meet every Saturday morning and there was a person saying like half of the group will have done some miles before like marathon training and then will come and do kind of a social 5K to finish it off. The other half have just rolled out of bed because they've been up late the night before and then are struggling through it. But sometimes I feel like if you've been up really late,
you're wired.
Yeah, you're so dazed and so confused about what's going on.
You don't
on
feel the pain, and maybe you've got loads of sugar in your system.
Yeah, what I will say though is I don't think you can run a
Andy's
PB
face,
on it.
And he's like, don't
well,
do this.
No, I'm just thinking about that one story of you people don't come here for science.
this is not a science.
But I don't think there's science behind heavy drinking and then performance being increased the day after. But I do have an anecdote, which is when I was at university, I was the captain of our team and a good friend of mine were pretty closely matched over cross country.
They let you be captain.
I know, unbelievable, right? Yeah. And he didn't tell me this until after we did this big race, but we've been training for this big race throughout this whole period.
Yeah.
And then his strategy was that he would go out and get absolutely hammered, like heavy drinking on the Thursday night before a Saturday race. Because it forced him to spend all Friday doing the ultimate rest and recovery day because he was so hungover. And then he'd perform really well on the Saturday.
Oh, because Saturday you're like, oh, I feel a bit better.
What's even more galling, he did that, this big race, and he beat me.
Wow.
Good on him.
I think and I know
let
who
me
that
guess,
is.
You went to the library on Thursday, you went to the library on Friday.
Before and after the race on Saturday.
I was just in the library every day. Yeah. my lovely wife is the only person I met at university. Yeah. That and the books.
You know what? I think
a lot
that
of books.
Could be true, actually. Could be true. Helen from Hertfordshire. I've recently got back into running after having two children and regularly run 8.5 kilometres a week, 3.5 at work, very similar to parkrun, and 5K either at parkrun or on my own run. As part of the group of runners at work, I've signed up for a 10K starting at 8 p.m. on the longest day of the year. It's called the Summer Solstice 10K in St. Albans.
Nice.
I have a couple of questions that I would be so grateful if you could help me with them. They are, one, should I do the majority of my training in the evening to try and mimic the feeling on race day? That is really interesting. Mm. Two, is there anything else I need to be doing to prep for a race in the evening after a busy day? You were talking before about Norway, about running at 10 o'clock at night. When you did that, had you been training running at 10 o'clock at night?
Yeah, but I didn't do all of my training. I think doing every single run at that time, I think would be overkill unless that's a good slot for you in your day's training. Mm. And doing that through the winter is not possible either because of the darkness. But I think doing a few practices and generally doing the harder runs that you do, the ones where you're going to simulate that race pace in some way, interval sessions or tempos, picking one of them each week and doing that, certainly in the last 3 weeks, 4 weeks before the race, would be a good way of just getting used to it. Because I think there's pretty good science behind your kind of circadian rhythms and your energy levels actually being at their highest in the evening. So I would, my big sessions, big race replication sessions, ones which are trying to do predictions or where I just know it's going to be really hard, I always did them in the evening on the track.
Oh, interesting.
Because, and the time of year would make a difference as well. Mm. So I think getting used to it getting used to eating. And also late, and I would be saying, for me anyway, I would do a shakeout run during the day for a late race as well, because you've got time and you don't want your body to kind of go to sleep. So just go out for 1 or 2K at lunchtime. And then the second question was, is there anything else to be doing to prepare? I would just try to limit the amount of time that you're kind of, I don't know what the job is here. So the amount of time you're spending on your feet, the amount of walking that you're having to do.
Yeah.
And then staggering your kind of food during the day.
Yeah, because it's a weird one as well. Because if you're leaving work, we've done it a few times where we've like gone for a race at 7 and like trying to get food in is hard, but just like staying fueled and hydrated, so key, especially in the summer.
At least it depends on what kind of meal you're going to have. Like if it's going to have a proper meal, then this is 8 o'clock start. But fry up, I would not recommend.
This is where you bring in your brunches and your linners.
Like, yeah, they're just weird, right?
What was the second one?
Your linners. It's like a cross between a lunch and a dinner.
Oh God. Yeah, I've only been away a week.
Your normal lunch would be like 1 o'clock probably. And then that's 7 hours until an 8 o'clock.
So that's three o'clock.
So you probably need to be eating at 3 or 4 o'clock.
Yeah, you know when you walk past restaurants and you see people eating at 3 PM and you're like, what are you doing?
No, you don't. Well, we think that.
What meal is this? But they're just linnering away.
Yeah. Sarah, you and I think that's every day with Rick. We go for lunch and it's like it's like 1 o'clock. See, the thing is, they haven't gone for lunch at 3.
They've
gone for lunch at 1 and they're still there.
I mean, we had lunch at 11 AM today, so we can't talk.
That was brunch.
That was brunch, sorry.
Well, that was fun. I've missed you both.
What he hasn't missed is the fact that we've been recording for a really long time.
Yeah, I didn't miss that.
We draw this out a little bit longer, we might crack into the 40-minute mark looking at the clock.
Yeah, we've probably cracked that. Let's see how it goes. Anyway, Sarah, have you got a favour?
A very, very quick favour. It's another request because Rick is really enjoying his running at the moment. So I would love people to email in podcast@therunningchannel.com. What would you like us to sign Rick up for? Because he keeps wanting to do a challenge.
Yeah, because
I've got a few ideas.
You don't listen to me. I send messages and saying, I'll do this, I'll do that
needed.
Video. Nobody gets back to me ever. Nobody wants me.
I think that's a reflection of the calibre of your ideas.
And on that note, we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
This episode was sponsored by Kiprun and their brand new shoe, the KD900X LD.
Now, we've mentioned that this goes through lots of rigorous testing, and one place that it's also been tested is at 42 House, which is a brand new project from Kiprun where they have incredible athletes out training in Kenya. And our very own Mo and James went out there to visit earlier this year.
Yeah, in E10, where I have trained back in the day when I used to be a professional runner. Have I ever told you that?
Never.
No, I never talk about it. It's an incredible place. It's where so many incredible runners have been shaped in that region. And so it's logical that if you want to make some of the best super shoes in the world and you want them to be worn on some of the best marathon runners in the world, you take it to what a lot of people consider to be the home of running.
Yeah, I love the fact that James, when he brought his KD900 XLD shoes back to the UK, they were covered in that iconic red dust from running on the trails. If you want to check out these shoes, then head to decathlon.com. They're also available in Decathlon stores worldwide.
So we're making Sarah run a marathon in Malaga.
Brilliant. This episode was sponsored by us, which Andy forgot to say.
Yeah.
And apparently I'm running a marathon. I mean, hey, if enough of you want me to do it, I suppose I could.
Or the half marathon. And we need to get something that gets Rick out of bed. We want you to come to Malaga with us. Half marathon or marathon. We've teamed up with Sports Stores International. It's an amazing place to go. The weather will hopefully be really nice. Certainly better than the UK weather in the middle of December. So it's a chance to come and be with the Running Channel and other runners from the Running Channel, which are all lovely people, I can promise that. And then we get to spend a few days together, be looked after by Sports Stores International, run a marathon or a half marathon, and then party and listen to us waffle on the podcast.
I think that'll be the bit that Rick's good at. I think what we're going to struggle with is getting him to put down a glass of Gavi long enough to be able to run a half marathon. But hey, stranger things have happened. So if you want to find out more info, head to the link in the show notes or go to trc.social/Malaga.